One question I've had for a while is I feel like there's like the intellectual and emotional capacity to Yiddishkeit, as we all know, and I've always kind of seen as like I've always seen like people go more towards the Hasidic side to like get to that more emotional capacity, but I know that's not necessarily Rebbe's hashkafa, but I have seen that Rebbe does have a lot of kavana in tefillah and a lot of just like geschmack in Yiddishkeit, and I was wondering like the more like Litvish approach to like having like real strong tefillah and real strong like emotional connection.
Any assertions you're making about me, I'm not sure about the validity.
I was gonna say, if anything I said might not have, there were a lot of
It's okay, it's
premises.
okay, it's okay. We don't have to spend time on that, but that's all. But I would just say, I mean, this there was recently this became a little bit of a topic in the yeshiva, and Berkowitz spoke about it, and it caused discussion, I guess, in the yeshiva amongst different guys and different bayim, probably going back about 6 to 8 weeks ago. It was shortly before you guys came, probably. And basically, Berkowitz spoke about the fact that there should be, obviously, we're striving for emotional and an emotional connection. But the emotional connection and sort of those, I guess, feelings, if you will, are supposed to be a product of intellectual development. Berkowitz was saying, like, any sort of just purely emotional thing that has not no basis in understanding and no basis in seichel is not something that we think is necessarily reflects growth or necessarily reflects true development as a ben Torah, but it should be the case that the experiences that you're having, for I guess we'll call them spiritual, for lack of a better word, or emotional experiences, are a product of things that you've learned, things that you've connected to, ideas that you've connected to. And then, if you've learned a lot about Shabbos and why Shabbos is as special as it is, or tefillah, or even things, I feel like there's times when a person's learning is going well, and then you find yourself at a Kumsitz or on Purim or on Hanukkah, whatever the thing may be, and it's just you, I don't know, you feel connected to the learning in a totally different way. I don't know, those things like the music and the things like that have the capacity to bring out emotional things that are going on inside of you that you have a hard time accessing. But Berkowitz, was saying how, he feels he felt like, just as an example, I believe this was these again, I wasn't there when this was said, but a lot of it was I heard about afterwards from different parties on different sides of the divide in a certain sense. But my understanding is that Berkowitz said something to the effect that, like, if you would have a guy who comes to yeshiva and he doesn't know anything, like really intellectually, like you just got the foundations, and then this big in Shabbos and he comes to Kabbalah Shabbos and people are going wild and he's loving it. That's not a thing. I mean, it's fine. It's not bad. It's okay. It's a positive experience, but that doesn't reflect anything real that's taking place inside of him. It's an exciting thing, but there's nothing going on, as opposed to people who have been working on themselves and developing themselves and have developed like a real connection with Hashem based on intellectual pursuits and understandings of deeper things. And then, the music has the music and Ruchnius type, a good davening, a good kedusha, can bring out feelings that you have inside of you that are coming from more emistic and genuine places. I think it's a mistake to feel like, like the divide that we have in our brains, like you were saying before. I think a lot of us harbor that understanding that, the more Hasidisha bent gets the real emotional part, and the Litvaks like totally miss that. And they're, the Hasidim aren't learning, and the Litvisha guys don't know how to feel, emotionally connected. Whatever, neither of those stereotypes should be true, hopefully. But listen, big adult, they're true. That's where stereotypes come from. That's where they come from. Right, but for any individual, no individual is shackled by those stereotypes, and everyone has the capacity to try to strike the balance that that we feel is appropriate.
I would just like add, like, is that something that happens like practically through, let's say I've learned, like, you mentioned Shabbos. Like, let's say I learned all this incredible deeper information about Shabbos. Like, do I is it like I want to like just meditate on that information on Shabbos and kind of like connect that bridge, I guess, or is it something that more habitually will happen as you become more knowledgeable and as you kind of integrate that knowledge into your life?
I mean, I think the former is a good way to go. You know, when you're learning things, to try to make them really practical and try to connect to them, I think is an important part of our avoda. I think it's totally good to try to push in that direction, not just assume it's going to occur. I think it's better to push. You know, we learn so many things all the time that have, I mean, depending on what you're learning, but things that have relevance to the way we process and the way we interact with our mitzvos and our learning. And the question is, to what extent are we trying to connect to those ideas? You know, I that we should be doing more of that all the time.
Ask a question. I feel like I hear so many Musar Shmuzim all the time, like Rebbe's Thursday night shirim. And there's always so, like, so many different points and so many good points that I like try to focus on, and then like for the next 2 days or whatever, like that's all I'm thinking about, and then I just forget it, and then the next week comes along, and then I forgot about last week's, and then it's like hard to apply it. So I mean, they're all really important to work on, and whatever the schmooze is about. So how can I keep them more in mind, like long term?
I mean, I think the idea with these kind of things, if you hear something that resonates with you, or something you think is kedai to work on, or you know you could use in your life, and you think it would be an important part of your development, to try to work on all these things simultaneously will never work. To try to keep a list of these things. You know, I think it's two separate things. It's one thing to work on something, you know, and for that, you know, simultaneously working on a bunch of things doesn't work, doesn't really work. But there's also just, you know, you can, so if you're going to try to proactively work on something, like the kind of things people think about, oh, you know, starts to make true, but even though ideally we should be thinking about it more. So then, you know, it would be the idea of Jesus to hold on to these things, maybe write them down, and maybe get back to them at some point. But I think there's also an avoda, separate and apart from systematic improvement in this given area, to become cognizant of something. So even if you're not working on it, you might catch yourself making a mistake in that area and move away from it. So you're not getting better in that area. You're not proactively working on it right now. But I think there's already a mila, I think this is really true, of just becoming more cognizant of it and catching yourself making the mistake, and more likely than in the past, not falling into the mistake. That's already something. I think that's already, listen, still when the weeks pass and there's a lot of ideas, it gets tricky to do that. You know, ideally, some of these things become just part of the way you operate. Or then again, all these things, like you're saying, like, you know, any shmooze you're going to hear that resonates with you, it's not a black and white thing. Nothing's black and white. You know, there's a zillion levels of whatever the thing is that you heard about. So ideally, you're moving more in the right direction in that area, you know, as opposed to systematic work, which would be some sort of measurable way of making sure that you're, you know, getting better in that area. That's very hard to do that simultaneously by a lot of different things.
Does Rebbe
The
also think there's
purpose of a shmooze a lot of times is just to raise awareness, you know, awareness about this topic, about this issue, about how we're falling prey to whatever this thing may be, and trying to work on that.
how do you balance with that? Like, I really kind of touched upon this in last week's shmooze, but how do you balance that pursuit of like, I need to make this thing like so objectively distant from me? Mentally, and then we spoke about like kind of how to then approach other people doing the same thing when like psychologically you're making this thing like so like disgusting to you so you don't interact with it, but also just with yourself, like how do you in a healthy way approach falling short of that thing that you've built up in your head to be so awful, and kind of pushing continuing to push yourself without like beating up on yourself or falling further?
Well, you said two things, right? One thing you're saying, asking is about how do you maintain the divide between your own avoda and people around you who are not in the same place? That's one question. Yeah. And the second question was about your own failings and shortcomings along the way. I mean, so the former question, I think you have to relate to your avoda with that, your interactions with other people is a separate part of your avoda. It's not just a way of enhancing whatever it is that you're working on. There's a separate part of avoda of kavod abrios, of giving kavod to other people and not treating them in a, you know, not degrading other people and respecting them properly. And so whatever it is that you're working on, if they're not up to that yet, so your avoda is, and this is part of, you know, totally part of your avoda Hashem, to treat those people with a tremendous amount of respect, and in no way, you know, be condescending as a result of whatever, you know, you've been zoche to incorporate into your own avoda. You know, with regard to the regular ups and downs, so I don't know, we all struggle with that. You know, you want to feel like when you look back at the last week, the last month, the last 2 months, there's an overall upward trajectory, you know, irrespective of little falls that may have happened in the interim. That's the, you know, we're all human. We make mistakes all the time. You want to feel like there's an upward trajectory taking place over the course of, you know, the week, the month, the 3 months, whatever the thing may be.
Does Rebbe think there's like a correct order, or not necessarily like the midos to work on, but just actually, yeah, the midos. Like, does Rebbe think there's a correct order to like work on this mida first and this mida first, or is it all individualistic?
Yeah, so I can just tell you what the Ali Shur, when he has his, you know, 16 midos that he lays out to work on, he explicitly says at the beginning that it doesn't matter the order that you go in. Totally, it doesn't matter. And choose. So I feel like, what I found over the years is that people find that anger is the best, I don't know, is one of the things that resonates with people the most. Anger doesn't necessarily mean that you're screaming at people. Anger / frustration, you know, peace of mind, you know, staying calm, being patient, that's all the same thing. And pretty much, I think most people need to work on that. I don't know, it's the kind of thing that comes up all the time. You know, I don't know that, but that's not. But again, he says explicitly that there's no order. It's just something I've seen over the years that people connect to a lot. And I think as far as things go, I think it's something that, you know, we all, the instances in which it comes up are so common. Frustration, anger is maybe less, but frustration comes up every day. You know, and how do you manage your emotions when that happens? And do you stay calm? And do you raise your voice and things like that? Things that I think are relatively easy to work on and relatively easy to measure. You know, go work on jealousy. How are you going to do that? It's so much harder. You know, so I don't know, some of the things are, or seeking honor. How are you going to work on seeking honor? Again, there are sections and I'm not sure about it. There are. Nice to see you, Gabby. You know, but it's a much harder thing to measure. And it's not as ubiquitous. You know, the frustration is all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know, but in terms of a proper order, Ali Shor doesn't see that.
Rebbe, I'm just curious.
Go ahead.
No, I just asked it.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't have my camera on right now, Rebbe.
We would love to see you. I mean, you're here already. It's like, you know what I'm saying.
So how would one balance the idea of Achdus and at the same time having to reject so many of the ideas that are like unfortunately infiltrating our Jewish community? Like there are so many, like, which I'm having a hard time elaborating here, but we can start with that premise.
Okay. I mean, let me think about the best way to start that. 1 second. Sorry. I mean, I think we need to try to separate the ideas that are espoused by people, you know, from the people themselves. A lot of times, you know, the ideas that are espoused by people are products of many different factors. The Achdus means that because you're a Jew, I love you. You know, and irrespective of whatever ideas you might be spouting, you're a Jew at the end of the day. We have to be able to try to make that split. Now, it's tricky because, you know, to the extent that that idea is a core value by that other person. So I think, you know, the people on the receiving end of the distinction that I'm making, not that you would articulate, well, you know, the rabbi said, you wouldn't say it like that anyway, but even your ability to try to process that way and think that way, to the extent that it's a core value by the other person, they would reject that distinction. that's part of who I am. Like, you can't separate that. That's who I am. So once they say that, so then you're sort of in a bind in terms of your ability to, you know, appease them. But I think for our own way of processing and interacting with people, I think we have to try very hard to make that split between the people and the ideas that they represent. It requires a tremendous amount of maturity. You know, we rush to disqualify people. We rush to look for ways to knock people down. I don't know. We have to try to make those distinctions. Hashem wants us to love everybody. And at the same time, there are, especially now, like you were sort of intimating, there's a lot of ideas that are antithetical to Torah values that are being espoused by Jews, especially on our secular campuses, for sure. And even in the workplace, it's complicated.
Question. How do you avoid Gaiva while doing Kiruv?
Why Gaiva?
Maybe that's not the right word, but just like feeling like one, like very like good about yourself, like when you're in an environment where you're working with guys who are struggling with very little things that you've overcome a long time ago, but maybe like, you know, that could be a lot harder for them than it was for you. And just like putting that in perspective and not kind of getting complacent with your growth. And also like when you get through to someone and when you're being successful, like you feel really good about it, but like not to kind of let that get to your head.
So I think two questions there. With regard to not becoming, you know, not having a condescending attitude. So I think it needs to be, you need to feel about your own successes and the own things that you've been able to accomplish are a product, you know, to a large extent, of the environments in which you found yourself. Of course, you made good decisions also, but you found yourself in particularly positive environments, whereas the people you're doing Kiruv with in NYU have not had the benefit of that exposure. I mean, probably not. And so they don't, you know, so it's true that you made good decisions, but in terms of the way you frame things for yourself, your own humility, it's appropriate to attribute a lot of it to, you know, circumstance. And the Baruch Hashem, that you found yourself in good places and around positive influences. And I think it's also like when you're having a positive influence on people, you know, like Rav Berkowitz always says, like, we have the best thing to sell people. Like, it's not you. The Torah is very powerful. So you might be a good conduit for it. But you have to relate to yourself as a conduit. I think that's the appropriate hashkafa to have. You know, if I'm teaching people Gemara and Rishonim, this is the best stuff in the world. Like, I'm just a good conduit for it. So that's great. It's flowing through me. So that's, I feel very blessed to be able to be a conduit for this information. But the fact that it changes people and makes them into bigger people and greater people and changes the way they look at the world, like, that's the Rashba. It's not me. That's Rabban Abaye. I'm just, you know, conveying the information. But I'm saying in any Kiruv opportunity that you find yourself, so I think that's the way that you're supposed to think. Now, you might be a more dynamic speaker and you might be more, you know, entertaining and engaging. That might be true. But if you were selling stuff that wasn't MS, people wouldn't be changing. They would just have a good time and walk out of the room afterwards. But I think it's very important that you relate to the koach of Shinui as a product of Hashem's Torah and not of whatever stuff that it is that you do. Now, again, we play this game with ourselves all the time, but it's an appropriate game to play. On the one hand, you know, what do you mean? I'm putting in tons of effort. I'm making meetings with these guys and I'm setting up things and I'm doing stuff. And even though I have so much work in school, not true, whatever, but you have all this stuff going on and you're making sure that you can get everything in. So yeah, you're killing yourself and you should feel good about that, but not to become Gaiva dick, because the changes that are taking place are a product of the Torah that Hashem gave you to give over to them. Like, you have to decide the way you frame things. Like, in anything that's going on in your life, there's always multiple ways of looking at it. It's multifactorial. Anything that you're witnessing in your life is multifactorial, and the attitudes that you have are a product of which of the factors you decide to focus on. So, you know, someone needs a self-esteem boost, so we can focus on the other one. But if you're nervous about Gaiva, you should be focused over here. They're both true. It's just a question of the way you process it and what you decide to focus on.
I wanted to ask in a more general sense, why jealousy is so common? I feel like when something that I want to happen to me happens to someone else, like my immediate reaction is like, oh, like I wish it was me. But why shouldn't it be like natural that like I'm happy for him? I just don't understand why.
I don't know, jealousy
Is
is
that
real.
only me?
It's real. No.
Over here too, Sammy. Great question.
Me too. I mean, Ken is extremely powerful. I don't know that you see it with little kids right away from such a young age. You know, it's like funny because when my kids were little, you watch your kids do things that are like really, really like, reflective of terrible, terrible midos. And you're trying to, on the one hand, you can watch it, they get jealous. Their brother has a cookie, go over, whack the kid and take it. Now, that's pretty bad. That's really not nice. And then you realize like, I have those mitos too. Just that, at the age of 35, like you're not supposed to walk over to be like really socially inappropriate to go take people's stuff, just because you're jealous of them. But you realize the mitos are still there. So I don't know why the Midah of Kinah, why Hashem put that into the Bria, that it's such a powerful force. I don't know. It's a big nisayon, requires a tremendous amount of hashkafic work to diminish it, to realize that him having it doesn't take away from you. It has nothing to do with you whatsoever. Hashem could give it to you just as well. Right? But you have to like train yourself in all of those thoughts, And I would say the only thing I would say back is that, Chazal say Kinat Sofrim Tar B'Chachma. That's the idea that, jealousy can be a positive force if it's used in the right arena. Tricky though. I think we'd all opt just to not have it at all. But I don't know why that became such, why Hashem put that in there as something that we have to navigate. It's whatever. It's very powerful. That's also a kind of example of the thing that's so hard to work on in a systematic way. How do you measure how much jealousy you feel? Levels of frustration, you can pretty much be on top of that. That's the kind of thing that in the past would get me all worked up. I'm barely worked up now. You could sort of jealous. I don't know. Jealousy is such a harder thing to like to monitor. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, whatever. It's just hard. It's hard. Sorry for the background noise here.
All right. Is there a certain category that I have to stay in terms of asking my questions, or is everything on the table?
Got me a few. Everything's on the table. For other people, there are categories.
Wow. All right, fine. So I have two questions. The first one's like less hashgafic, but to make up for it, I'll ask. Just out of curiosity, if one wanted to do like Iyun Kal on a however many blad of Gemara, what would be like the most fundamental and best mefarshim to look at?
Iyun Kal, I would say, I would think, is Gemara Rashi Tosfos Maharsha. Maharsha. And then to pick one Rishon that you're going to go with. One Rishon that you're going to take with you. Ritva Rashba, but maybe depends on the Masechta you're in. The Ritva is easier than the Rashba usually. Gemara Rashi Tosfos Maharsha and one Rishon. That's what I would think.
Thank you, Rabbi. And then this is more of a broad question, but to what extent should a person let their hashkafos affect their halachas?
What do you mean by that? What's an
Like,
example?
I guess to throw out a few examples, maybe like Tehillas or I don't know, I guess Tachnun on like Yom HaTzmaut, and all those similar types of halachas that tend to be grouped with certain hashkafos.
I mean, I feel like for each person, like these kind of things are really just a question for who, a Rebbe. Like, if you have a Rebbe, so then if you have, I mean, if you don't have one, so it's more complicated. But if you have a Rebbe who feel like really understands you and really knows you well, so it's just these are the things that are so convenient to just throw on the Rebbe and just ask him what to do. That's what I think. And the Rebbe will know, like if he knows you really well, you say, no, Rebbe, but for me, Tehillas is really important for reasons X, Y, and Z. The Rebbe knows, where you're situated now, who you're hanging out with, what your chevra is, and what it's going to mean to wear tefillas and all that, and let him weigh all of that and figure out what the right thing is. I whatever. It's a mile of having a Rebbe to let him make these kind of calls that could really go either way. And, you know, there it's good, the good examples that you had, like the hashkafic halachic intersection. I don't know. I think it's just good to have a Rebbe who, if you're in a yeshiva and they do a certain thing, you should do what they do. But if you're not, you're a balabas, you're living in a community somewhere or whatever, and it's a hefkevelt and everybody's doing whatever they want. So it's good to have a Rebbe to talk to who can sort of, you know, facilitate what he thinks is the proper balance for you. But again, that assumes that you've succeeded in maintaining a relationship with that person for a while, and he really knows who you are and gets you and all that. Nice to see you, Isaac. Shalom aleichem. Shkoyach. That's an Isaac thing. Yeah. Any questions, Isaac?
How many times, if we're home for the day, let's say with our family or for Shabbos, how many times do we have to stand up for our parents?
I mean, does it spook out your parents when you stand up for them?
They haven't really noticed it so far. I also haven't been doing full stands. You have to do a full stand or like just a tef? Like, what's the?
I don't know. I try to stand up for my parents when they're here.
Full stand or like a little tef?
I do a full stand. I do a full stand. I don't think you need to be standing up every time they walk into the room. I don't think so. The exact gather, I don't know. I don't know if it's once a day or I don't know. The exact gather, I really don't know. Certainly if you're sitting in the den, they're walking back and forth in the kitchen and stuff like that, certainly not. If they leave the house and come back an hour later, maybe yes. The exact gather, I should say, I don't know the exact gather. I don't know.
And also,
parents haven't noticed that you're doing it?
Well, I haven't been doing full stands. I've been doing like little skadooshes.
What if it does freak them out though? Should you stop?
I never heard that word before, and I've studied a lot of words.
I was going to ask Daddy what that meant.
Can we get the spelling on that?
Skadoosh.
I'm kidding. I've never heard that. Like, I've been around a little bit.
Yeah, if it does freak them out, should you stop?
Listen, they're allowed to be mochel on their kavod. They're allowed to be mochel on their kavod. I think it's nice to say to them, you know, you brought me into the world. I respect you tremendously. I feel a tremendous sense of gratitude. I like to stand up when you walk into the room. If they say no, it really spooks. Okay, Jack's like, that's going to totally spook them out. Listen, you have to know your parents. If you think it's going to totally spook them out, so don't say that.
No, yeah, I'll try. I mean, at this point, I had no idea what to expect ever.
Hey, you're getting that kind of your engagement, Jack. You're good.
wedding, engagement, we'll see.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, on the same topic, we're not supposed to call our father by like his first name. So when you get called up to the Torah, what are you supposed to say?
People try to say like Reb. I mean, you say like, you know, I say Yosef ben Reb David Eliezer. That's what people say.
And then they call you up as your father being a rabbi, which he's not.
I don't know. I don't know. Here, I guess here everybody's sort of a rabbi. At least that's what they assume. I don't know. It doesn't really mean anything. Eretz Yisrael doesn't mean anything. It's like you know, here they say my father has like a long-standing routine here. Like anybody, if they're like trying to enlist help from people, they call you Harav Hagon. My father's like Harav Hagon is the equivalent of Mister in the United States. But I think it's okay. You know, that's what the people do. They say you're not calling him right now. You're not calling him. The problem is to call him.
Yeah.
It also has to be in third person technically.
What's that?
It technically has to be in third person. What I understood is, does Abba want this? You shouldn't really say, Abba, do you want this? That's what I understood.
Really? I don't know. I've never done that. You speak like that to your father?
No. They don't want me to speak to them like that.
You're saying what technically it's supposed to be. It could be. I don't know. I'm not familiar.
Interesting.
The same way you speak to her, as you're saying.
Some people don't appreciate how you speak to them like that, so they say call me like a regular,
right?
Hey father, can you get me this, whatever it is. But technically speaking, you should really speak to him as a third person.
Okay, I hear that. I think right, in America no one's going with no one wants that. I guess that's the understanding, but I totally hear that. I don't know why we're different from already.
I know when my sister came back from seminary, she asked my father if it's okay to say it, and my father's like, no,
definitely not. Not even maybe.